Craig Hoffman.
And then after that, it's the Dallas Cowboys, who also want to run the football. I was like, they want to run the ball so much, their quarterback's name is Rush.
The Hoffman Show.
I'm the worst. After I make that terrible joke, I got to go to Momo for instant reaction. Momo, just...
No, that was actually Bonham and Bailey's funny. Yeah, I kind of got a chuckle out of that.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980 on a Friday. We got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. NBA draft reaction continues. We will have our pal Zach Harper on the show at 4:30 to talk about that, as well as everything else going on in the NBA. Just an absolute stunner this morning in Toronto. Masai Ujiri out after 13 years at the helm of the Toronto Raptors. We'll get Zach's reaction to that. And more, we also have, for Not My Beat today, a trip to the WNBA. Kareem Copeland wrote about every WNBA fan's favorite thing, officiating. So we'll talk to Kareem coming up at 5 p.m. You'll hear from Logan a little bit later, Take Command style on a Friday. But we start with letting you hear a little bit more about the Wizards' newest, latest, shiniest toy. I guess technically not the latest. They, of course, took a player last night in the second round, and they took Will Riley after they took Trey Johnson in the first round. But this morning, Will Dawkins joined the Junkies and had some things to say about Trey Johnson. And Chad Myers, who coached Trey Johnson in high school in Missouri, joined Linnell on overtime last night. So we have some things to play for you from that front. Starting with, very simply, let's hear from Will Dawkins on why the Wizards liked Trey Johnson. They took number 6 overall in the 2025 NBA draft.
Yes, he was one of our top targets for a lot of reasons. Obviously, he's a really good player in terms of being able to move the scoreboard and shoot. But he's got the right work ethic and mentality. So once we got him in our building and got a feel for him, he was someone that was top 5 on our board all season long. And when you fell to 6, you felt pretty good when you find someone that you have ranked so high.
It's really interesting to hear a lot of the scuttlebutt coming out of this draft where, you know, Ace Bailey, who we're going to talk about later, because I think the Ace Bailey situation is a lot more complicated than a lot of people are making it. Everyone just wants to crush Ace Bailey because he's super mad that Utah picked him. And I don't think it's that simple. And like NBA teams are saying this and agents are saying that. Like, I think it's a fascinating, like, big picture conversation, and we're going to have it at 6 o'clock. But a lot of people, a lot of the reporting, Tim Bontemps, our pal from ESPN, was amongst those who was reporting on the fact that a lot of people think the Wizards were the team that had Ace Bailey or made a promise to Ace Bailey at 6, and then Utah takes him at 5, and, you know, and then the Wizards are like, okay, fine, we'll take Trey Johnson. If he was the top 5 player on their board all the way, though, that means one of the guys who got taken in the top 5 was not a top 5 player on their board all year, or not a top 5 player on their board. And I think a lot of people probably assume that that's Con Knipple, who is a late riser in this draft. And I could see Washington definitely wanting Con Knipple. The Ace Bailey thing, with the way he approached this process and the things that he said are important to him, just never really makes sense to me in terms of the Wizards. Now, there's also a report from Kristen Peek, who used to be with Yahoo and is an independent draft analyst now, who's doing her own thing on the media side and is excellent, that Bailey had a secret workout with the Wizards. So maybe they did have a keen interest in Ace Bailey. But Trey Johnson, certainly someone they were high on. And I think very early in the process, he's the guy that I circled of the guys that I thought might be available in that range that I thought best fit Washington and what they want to do. Will also on the Junkies this morning, again, Will Dawkins joining the program, had a really great anecdote on Trey Johnson being a student of the game, which is something they obviously care about quite a bit in terms of the guys that they are bringing in.
He's a pure hooper. He's like a lot of teenagers, likes to hang out and play video games and things of that nature, but he's singularly focused on basketball. We had him over for dinner, and we're talking to him, and it's me, Coach Keith, I think Amber Nichols, we're talking about a play that happened in one of the Mystics games. It was a DHO where the player went under the screen and then came back around to isolate on the other side. And we were saying it out loud, and he said, yeah, I've seen that a couple times in some other WNBA games. They're starting to do that. And that's when you realize that this dude, like, he gets it. He really loves basketball. He watches it and studies it. And that was kind of one of those things where, like, okay, the IQ is there, but the passion to get better and watch all types of basketball, like, he's a true hooper.
That doesn't surprise me based off what I know about this kid and what, you know, he said, right? And, you know, kids are kids. But in the NBA's case, like, we're talking about legit kids. These kids are 18, 19 years old, most of them in this draft. Obviously, some a little bit older, but the top players are coming out after 1 year, or the international guys coming over as soon as they're eligible at 18, and that is what it is. But or at 19, but that is what it is. But he said on draft, or at the draft combine, like, I have no other hobbies. I watch basketball. I play basketball. Like, basketball is my hobby. And there's a ton of dudes in the league like that. Like, LeBron James watches a ton of hoop. I'm trying to think of some of the other guys who just live, breathe, eat, sleep basketball. And it helps make you a great – like, there is a portion of greatness that comes with the necessity for obsession. And obviously, well-rounded people can also succeed in a variety of fields. And being well-rounded as a human is a good thing. And I hope as Trey Johnson gets older and he has all the opportunities that come with being a professional athlete in the world's most powerful city, that his world expands a little bit and he's able to get out and maybe falls in love with the food scene, or maybe he enjoys some art, or maybe he, you know, takes a liking to insert any hobby that anyone has here. But a guy that is paying attention at that level and is not just like casually watching the game, but is watching the game through that lens, I think is a great thing. And I will also say that particular action, I'm a gigantic nerd, that particular reverse DHO action where, you know, players are starting to come off screens and go back around the other way. I think you're going to see a ton of it in the NBA next year. It has started to populate a lot in the WNBA. It's a way to avoid like a player, it's basically a rescreen before you get the ball. Like, the concept of a rescreen is I'm going to go right off a screen and then you're going to go under it. And then we're just going to flip the screen at the last second. And now you're pinned in a really bad spot. And it's just taking that before the player who's getting screened for has the ball. So it's a dribble handoff. And I want to say Caitlin Clark was the one who started to do that, I think, with Aaliyah Boston. And more teams are certainly going to do that because, you know, as these shooters get more lethal and lethal, like, you got to find ways to get them open. And the fact that Trey Johnson's like, how about this trick? I love that. That's a great anecdote. One more from Will Dawkins, and then we'll take a quick break, come back and let you hear from Chad Myers, his high school coach. Trey Johnson's high school coach. Will Dawkins, though, talking about how it's funny that the Junkies asked him about this because he didn't want to talk about this at the press conference on draft night, about showing tape to Trey Johnson, and Trey Johnson, you know, having that conversation with him. And he's like, man, I got to tell Trey, we, like, don't tell our secrets. We don't want people knowing that we do that. But he was willing to talk about it with the Junkies. So what was the reaction to, you know, to Trey watching his own film with Will and with Brian Keefe?
Yeah, I told him he's got to stop sharing house secrets like that. But when guys come in, we try to make sure that they know exactly who we are so we can learn who they are. And with that, we go through, and they spend time with everybody in the organization, from our player pathways and enrichment teams all the way to our analytic teams. And they do film sessions with the coaches, but also spend some time with myself and Travis and Amber in the front office. And we watch film with them, and it's like, hey, this is what we've seen. This is what we like. These are the real question marks we have. Sometimes you can't tell whose fault it is, what the assignments, what's being asked. So we just got to figure it out. And it's really just learning how they are willing to take accountability, how much humility they have, and how much they're willing to push and work on those things. And I'd say we've had similar conversations with a lot of our players, and the way he was able to show us how he learned and show us the things he saw. And I think it motivated him the next day to kind of fight in some of those areas. And I like how he accepted the challenge. I would say that.
Will Dawkins on the Junkies this morning. For the full interview, just search the Sports Junkies wherever you get your podcasts. And when we get back, that was something that Trey Johnson also discussed with his former high school coach, Chad Myers. Chad joined Linnell last night on Overtime. You'll hear that side of the conversation, plus why Myers says Johnson is the exact kind of guy that he always looks for. Next on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, and always live as well on the free Odyssey app. My guy Zach Harper joins us, the Athletic NBA writer. Their newsletter, The Bounce, is awesome. You should check that out. Subscribe. Get great NBA coverage to your inbox every morning. Or just keep listening, because Zach is going to join us at 4:30. Last night on Overtime on 106.7 The Fan, Linnell Willingham had Chad Myers, who is the head coach for the high school that Trey Johnson attended before going to the University of Texas, and now, of course, the sixth overall pick in the 2025 NBA draft to your Washington Wizards. And a couple of interesting bites from Coach Myers. And first and foremost, this one about who Trey is as a person, which I feel like a lot of coaches say this stuff, but the wording here is fairly specific. Chad Myers on his former player, Trey Johnson, and why he's always looking for kids like Trey Johnson.
What we're really trying to find is not only elite players, but guys that like love to be in a gym. And, you know, they're coming to Branson and trying to make themselves college ready and eventually always have a chance to play in the NBA. And everything you've heard about Trey kind of hits that. Like, he loves basketball. He's a basketball junkie. And he made the most out of the year at our place, and he obviously helped keep us one of the best teams in the country.
Chad Myers, the coach at Link Academy in Missouri. So, like, you know, Montverde, like all these prep programs that you've probably heard of. This is just another one. And Trey's team was very, very good for the year that he was there. And so when you talk about, like, we're looking for kids like that, it's not because he grew up in his backyard and he's coaching at a public school. Like, these are kids that are recruited at the high school level for high school championship competition purposes. And they go there to get ready to go be college ready. And then obviously they go to college and they're hoping that the coaches that are there can get them to the pros. And, you know, speaking of coaches, we had Brad Underwood on yesterday, who told us about Will Riley, the other first round pick for the Washington Wizards last night or Wednesday night when they traded number 18 back and got to 21 and took Riley. And very similar type of thing, just like A-plus kid who works so, 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 so hard. And Chad Myers went even further and compared Trey Johnson's work ethic to some of the hardest workers, some of the for the love of the game hoopers that we've seen in recent NBA history.
Yeah, I think he has some of like the Kobe stuff in him. I mean, he's super competitive. Like, his just mentality to work is at a different level. We have a unique situation. We practice every morning 10 to 12, and then we actually come back and do team skill work 6:30 to 8. And I don't think there was one day during that time that he wasn't in the gym before weights and breakfast at 6 a.m. getting in, like, another workout. And then half the time he would be coming back at 10 and sitting in the gym and getting up shots. And I think that's why he had so much success at Texas. I think he took advantage of being there in summer school, and then they've kind of said the exact same thing. And obviously those are high expectations going to D.C., talking about Kevin Durant, but, you know, it kind of fits the bill, and that's who he's modeled himself after, you know, Kobe and his work ethic.
The Kobe work ethic thing is always kind of funny. I mean, there's great stories from, like, the 2008 Olympics where I think it's Carmelo who was telling the story, and a bunch of the dudes went out one night. They're in Rio, or 2008, no, where that would have been in Beijing. This is the 2012 team, so they're in London, and or was it 08? No, it was 08. It was 08. So the redeem team, right? And it's like D Wade and Carmelo, and those guys go out, and they're out super late, and they're getting back at like 4 a.m. And I think actually it might have been before they even left, and they're in Las Vegas for USA basketball camp, right? So they haven't even technically made the team yet, or they've made the team, but they're about to go. Point is, they're out crazy late, and it's like 5 a.m., 4 a.m., something like that, and they get in an elevator, and they're getting back. Kobe's gets in the elevator to go down to the gym to work out, because that's how he got down. And starting that day, a lot of those dudes started changing their schedules. And they might go out at night, but they were going to be back enough to get some sleep, and they were going to be up working out with Kobe the next day. And, like, that's why on that 08 team, like, a lot of those guys' careers took the next step after it. It wasn't just the Olympic experience. It was being around the veterans on that team that were already – or had already solidified their Hall of Fame bona fides, and specifically Bryant, who just worked at a different level. Durant's an interesting guy, too, from a work ethic standpoint, because he's never been a super weight room guy, but he's a guy that just loves to play basketball and just lives on the court and is always getting up shots. He just loves to play basketball. He loves to hoop. And so he gets it done in a different way. And the capacity to work is a skill. Like, work capacity is something you can work on. There is part of that that is physical. There is also part of that that is mental. And to know that Trey Johnson has that for an organization that requires a lot from its players. You know, that's something that is I've been around longer in this this business, and also around this team and around these guys that are in charge over there. Like, they definitely ask/require, depending on what time of the year it is. Like, once they're there, they're there. But, like, even in this part of the calendar, like, a lot of NBA guys are in LA or doing their own thing wherever. They have a ton of guys in the gym that just are like, I want to stay here. I want to work with my people. Like, I want to be in this environment. And they're around. And you know it. You know they're around because they're constantly at Mystics games. They're posting videos from the facility on Instagram, et cetera. And, like, that's good. Like, you know, hey, after the season, get away for a little bit, unplug, reset, refresh your body, but eventually get back in there and get to work. Because, you know, even, you know, you could say, like, oh, shouldn't they take more time off? It's like, you want to be playing this time of year. The finals wrapped last weekend on Sunday. If you want to be in condition to play in the playoffs one day, like, get used to playing the extra or working for the extra month and a half. So I think some of these young guys really take that kind of stuff to heart, and Trey Johnson's going to fit right in from that. Who is Trey Johnson off the floor? What's his family like? Linnell asked Chad Myers, his coach at Lincoln High School or Lincoln Academy in Missouri, about that, and this was Chad Myers' answer.
Yeah, I think kind of what his dad said last night, right? Like, his dream was to play in the NBA, and Richard was always around. Yeah. And that's really was Trey's circle, you know, him and his mom. But his dad is always around. I think his dad having experience being a good player at Baylor, I'm sure he shared a lot with Trey, like, you know, what he did great, what he needed, you know, to do better. And I think Trey is very aware and listens a lot, but that's just kind of how he is. Like, he's really in the gym. It's unique, even, like, people on our staff, like, that have, like, younger siblings, you know, and younger kids, like, Trey gets on and plays Xbox against kids from Lincoln and stuff still to this day. And it's just kind of, he's very tight knit and just very simple in the gym, working on his game, you know, playing Xbox and, you know, which is exciting to anybody that can draft a guy like that because, you know, he's really serious about basketball. And obviously that's a huge piece of being successful at that level.
It's your job. And, you know, even people that want to do this job, right? And, like, this job is different than that job, but it's a job that people look at and go, man, that's got to be fun. Like, yeah, it is fun. Like, this job, talking about sports, like, today was a stressful day. I'm not going to pretend like it wasn't. It is June 27th. There ain't a lot going on. Trying to, like, I'm constantly refreshing ESPN.com and The Athletic and, you know, Washington Post and, like, just trying to find, is there an interesting article that I could talk about? Is there an interesting article that I could get the author on? Is there, like, what the hell are we going to talk about today? It's not work, but, like, at the end of the day, if I show up at 4 o'clock, it's like, okay, now talk. Blah, 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 blah. It's not laying concrete. It's not, no, I'm not saving lives. I'm not doing all this. And in the NBA, it's the same thing, right? Like, at the end of the day, your job is to play basketball, but your job is to play basketball at the highest level that it's played on earth. And if you don't do that, then your career is going to be really, really short. It is a job. And by the way, it is unlike this job. And, you know, it may pay very differently and it's very different in a lot of ways from laying concrete. But, like, the physical toll on the body of an NBA player is no joke. And the maintenance and the lifestyle that you have to live to be able to play 65, nevertheless 75, nevertheless, like Bob Carrington did last year, 82 games. Is very real. And for a kid to have that understanding coming in and to want that coming in, where he's not going to have to learn things the hard way, hopefully, fingers crossed, I think is a huge advantage. Last but not least, the mentality piece of this, and this is where we ended the first segment of the show as well. Will Dawkins talking about the film session that he had with Trey Johnson. Chad Myers talked about that with Linnell last night on Overtime as well.
No, I mean, I think he wants that. Like, you know, the only way you can get better is through, like, learning. And obviously people that tell you the truth for all of us. I mean, in my profession, your profession,
sure.
You know, we need
for
truth
sure.
tellers around us.
Right.
And it's funny. I know he won't be working with directly, but Cody Toppard and me worked together. That's the G League coach there. And I told him, I said, you know, you'll love Trey just because, like, he wants to get better. And, like, I just know how, you know, everybody on the staff there, and I know Cody's tremendous with, you know, breaking down film with those guys, showing them things, and he's the kind of kid that eats that up. Like, you're like, hey, I saw this on film. Like, he'll be knocking on your door. Can you show me what you saw? You know, and
right.
And then, hey, I made that mistake on offense. I didn't make this read. And even as simple, like, when he was playing in the McDonald's game, we were, you know, a lot of people didn't realize how good of a passer he was.
Yes.
Just because anytime you get labeled as a scorer, you know, people don't think you can make reads and make passes. And he made a play in the McDonald's game, and I texted him, like, that night. He had responded, like, Coach, you saw that hook pass we've been working on. That, like, you know, that was what he was thinking about, like, what he had been working on, how he implemented that, even the McDonald's game, which is an all-star game. So
right.
I think he wants that. I think he wants guys that are going to push him. I think he wants teammates that are going to push him. And honestly, he's better in that environment. He probably struggles more with guys that aren't motivated to work. He wants more
wow.
people that are motivated and try to get to the same call as he is. So.
Either all these people around him are frauds, or the Wiz got a good one in Trey Johnson. And by the way, talk about, you know, okay, that sounds great, but, like, what's he done? He led the SEC in scoring as a freshman in what was considered one of the best conferences in a long time in college basketball. That it was definitely the best conference this past year. The SEC was loaded with, you know, Oklahoma and Texas now joining, you know, Florida, who was the eventual national champion, and, you know, Arkansas with Cal, Kentucky still got dudes, like, South Carolina had a top 10 pick in Colin Murray Boyles. Like, it was a loaded SEC. And the guy who scored more points than anybody else last year is now the newest Washington Wizard. So tells you something about the results he's able to get as well. When we get back, Zach Harper on what he thinks of the draft picks for the Wizards, the Ace Bailey situation, and the shocker of the day in the NBA, Masai Ujiri. Out in Toronto, Zach Harper from The Athletic joins us next. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Our pleasure to welcome back to the show an NBA writer for The Athletic and author of The Athletic's daily NBA newsletter, The Bounce. Busy time of year for Zach Harper between the finals that concluded somehow 7 weeks ago Sunday, as in, like, it feels like it's 7 weeks ago, but it was actually Sunday. And then, of course, free agency starting with the draft in between. But Zach with us now. Welcome back to the show, dude. How are you?
It never ends. It absolutely
ends.
Will never end. Yeah.
Although, like, you know, July 17th or so, I guess that's Vegas summer. Let's see. But, like, the 25th. We might have a week, and then some dumb pre-training camp trade will happen, and that's,
yeah.
You know, there it goes.
Yeah, I feel like Giannis is going to, like, not demand a trade, but he'll, like, hint at something on Twitter, and then we're going to lose our minds.
But that's, like, that's silly season, and that one's on us. Like, sometimes it's okay to just relax, right, Zach? Right? Right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'm all for it. I don't think we need to participate in it, but that's not how the industry works.
No, we need them clicks, obviously. That's how the industry works now, which is a great model that's not hurting anybody. Okay, before I get us all fired for, you know, discrediting what the validity of our jobs. Let's start with the news of the day. We'll get to some Wizards draft stuff. I want to talk with you about the Ace Bailey situation because I feel like that's an interesting conversation to be had. But I was I looked at my phone this morning, goes off, oh, let's see what this ESPN alert, or sorry, this The Athletic alert is. Wait, Masai's out in Toronto? What was your reaction to Masai Ujiri, who's widely thought of as one of the best and most important executives in the NBA, parting ways with the Toronto Raptors after 13 years?
Yeah, he was one of the best. I mean, he hasn't been that good
Fair
in a while.
Enough.
But yeah, he was. I mean, he didn't get a great return on the Siakam deal. You know, like, it's fine. Like, he had a pretty okay return on the OG trade. but not great. Like, I mean, I think after the title, he went into this weird, like, everyone's going to be 6'9" on our team, and we don't need big men, except you do need a big man. And eventually he got Jakob Poeltl back. But, yeah, like, Masai should still be one of the best. Like, I think a lot of people saw this coming when it seemed like they weren't going to work out a contract extension. I don't know that I saw him leaving now, but I didn't expect him to make it, you know, past next year. It seemed like they were going to part ways regardless. Him running the draft is a little weird if you were going to do this. Like, that part is confusing. Like, we've seen some stuff like that before with teams, but if you're going to fire him, then or part ways with him, excuse me, then part ways. Like, don't, like, have someone in there with plenty of time to run the draft.
Right. To have a different lead executive, and maybe they kept it quiet and he didn't actually run the draft. I guess that's a possibility, unless it's been reported otherwise that he was really running things yesterday or the last 2 days. But to considering the short time between, to have a different chief executive for the draft and free agency in the NBA feels unprecedented, to say the least. But then again, the Knicks just had a draft without a coach. So, you know, everyone's doing great in the East, Zach.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, the East is wide open, so why not go into it haphazardly if you're gonna do it? That's how you should approach it.
Obviously. All right. The Wizards, I think a lot of people like what they did. Obviously, they're still a couple years away from competing in the East. Who knows what the East will look like by then. But they get Trey Johnson. They also get Will Riley at 21. How do you think Will Dawkins and company did for the Wizards the other night in the draft?
Oh, I thought they did great. I mean, I think them ending up with Ace Bailey or Trey Johnson was the goal. They didn't, it sounds like, you know, from what I heard, they didn't really want to give up future picks in order to move up, which I totally understand, in order to go get Ace Bailey, you know, above the Utah Jazz at 5. And so if you're not going to move up to 4 to go get him and you feel Trey Johnson is right there in terms of a prospect, then that's a great play. I think Trey Johnson is going to fit in perfectly with that group. This kid can shoot. Like, his footwork is amazing. His shot is great. He's a bona fide scorer. I'm not going to, like, outright dismiss him defensively, because I don't know that Texas team, you know, was really all that great in terms of what they set him up to be defensively. And obviously we're not going to see that in the next couple of years with what the Wizards are going to be. We'll see it a few years from now. But I think Trey Johnson is a phenomenal prospect. He was one of my favorite guys in the draft. I love the young group that they've got together. I'm also a big Will Riley guy. Like, I think, you know, he's got to put on some weight. He's got to get a lot stronger. But he's someone that I think the shot will be there. I think he's a guy that just goes out and makes plays. I think he's a tenacious guy on both ends of the floor. And I think ending up with those two, with the way that they kind of were wheeling and dealing for Will Riley and with the second pick in the first round, I think that's just a great draft for them to have.
Yeah, the way they've already, you know, transformed, let's say, Bilal's body in 2 years, I have a lot of faith in their ability to do that to Will Riley as well. It's like, hey, man, here's the weight room, here's the protein. Please, we'll see you in a year. On the Bailey-Johnson thing, I'm trying not to get my own bias into this because I liked Johnson a lot. But I also listened to, like, Will Dawkins talk about what they look for and, like, why he likes Riley, why he likes Johnson, the competitiveness and the kind of the makeup element, the human personal characteristics. And I know everyone's reporting that Ace Bailey to Washington was a thing, and that's where Bailey wanted to go, that maybe there was even a secret workout at one point, that certainly there's a lot of smoke there. But is Ace Bailey the kind of competitor that a team that is prioritizing that, Wizards or otherwise, is looking for? I mean, I would guess if Danny Ainge took him, like, Danny Ainge wants psycho competitors. So is Bailey misunderstood in that way, or is it just purely that his talent is so great that people are willing to look past things that they maybe wouldn't for other prospects?
I think Ace Bailey's taking a lot of heat for what Omar Cooper's doing. Like, he trusts an adult who has been leading him since he joined his AAU team, right? Like, Omar Cooper, for people who don't know, Omar Cooper is Sharif Cooper. You may remember that name from, like, you know, Instagram reels and YouTube highlights, and Sharif Cooper was briefly in the NBA. Omar Cooper is his father. Omar Cooper has an AAU team. At one point, Ace Bailey played for it, and he's been kind of, like, guiding Ace through this process. And he's not his agent. He's just representing him and, like, helping him. because he's not a certified agent. But Omar Cooper has, like, been kind of running this whole process for him. And, like, he's, like, an 18, 19-year-old kid who just, like, okay, yeah, I trust you. Like, and he's taking a lot of heat for this. So everyone's like, oh, Ace Bailey's doing this, and Ace Bailey's doing that. Like, no, he's, like, trust this adult to do things for him. And, like, I don't know why we're, like, hammering Ace Bailey for all of this stuff, right? I'm hammering Omar Cooper for this stuff. I think Omar Cooper's making bad decisions. I don't hammer Ace Bailey for this. I think Ace Bailey is a phenomenal prospect. I think he's crazy talented. I think that he and Dylan Harper had zero help at Rutgers, right? They have been better? Absolutely. That team should have been better. They also spent all their NIL money on two guys, right? Like, that. Like, there was no talent outside of them on that team. So I think the Ace Bailey stuff is overblown, and I think he's taking a lot of heat for something an adult guiding him is deciding right now. And I think he's going to be an incredible pro. I think him ending up in Utah was really good for his development. I don't buy any of the stuff that he's going to hold down and he's not going to report or any of this stuff. I don't buy that because I just, like, who's the last player to do that? Like, Steve Francis was the last player, like, be like, no, I'm not playing here. Like, get me out of there. Like, I don't buy any of this Ace Bailey discussion right now. I think it's all so overblown.
So following up on that, I'm going to ask this question neutrally, or as neutrally as I can, understanding what you just said and not trying to push back against it. But, like, so even the stuff where Bailey is like, I want to go somewhere where I can get shots. You look at that as Cooper is telling him what to say. He's saying it. And the negative reflection of that is actually a reflection on Cooper and not Bailey.
He wants a young player wants to go out there and get shots and score. Of course, that's basketball. Like, he's a scorer. He's a guy that wants to go out there and lead a team and go out there and score and shoot. That's basketball. I don't look at that as any kind of negative thing. He's not saying I never want to play defense. I never want to do this. He wants to go out there and be the guy early. I don't look at that as, like, a problem at all. I think that people have decided that Ace Bailey is going to be the problem child in this draft class. And so anything that happens now, like, we're just going to paint it negatively. He may end up being that. I don't know. But I just think, like, it's weird that it's being shaded this way at this point.
What stock do you put into – Zach Harper from The Athletic is with us here on The Hoffman Show. What stock do you put in, if any, vets like Draymond Green and Paul George on their podcast? Because that's the thing we have now, criticizing him in the way that he's handling this.
I don't think he's handling it this way. I think Omar Cooper is. Like, I think he's trusting an adult to, like, handle this situation. I don't expect 19-year-olds to know how to handle the business. I don't. Like, even in the NIL, like, era, you know, like, didn't Evan Mobley not work out for the Cavs and they took him?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, okay, were we killing Evan Mobley over this? Ricky Rubio didn't want to go to Minnesota. That worked out. You know, like, I don't think his camp and, like, has handled this well. But also, like, there are so many times where players will not work out for a team and then the team takes them anyway. For some reason, we have zeroed in on this is the problem time. And again, it might end up being a bad situation. I just don't know why this one is different.
Yeah, and my hypothesis, whatever it would be worth, is a lot of this is probably also agent-driven. You have a lot of reporters who talk to the same agents, and now you have someone that's coming in from the outside and doing it differently and is not part of the club, and that sometimes rubs a lot of people the wrong way, and even if someone who was in the club were to do the exact same thing.
Right. You know, and I'm with you on that, right? Like, we don't like when someone, like, disrupts the system, and they have openly disrupted the system, right? And it might end up being detrimental for him. I do know that, like, Austin Ainge deciding, like, no, that's my guy, because everything I heard leading up to the draft was like, oh, he's not really an Austin Ainge type of player. And then the fact that he took him, they're like, yeah, we're not trading him. This is the guy. Austin Ainge knows his stuff. Yeah. Austin Ainge is a really good talent evaluator. He was a big part of a lot of that talent evaluation for the Boston Celtics over the last, you know, decade, I guess, or however long he was in that role, helping out that organization. And so, you know, the fact that he ended up taking him, look, I'm not saying, you know, Austin Ainge is going to be perfect at this, but that kind of opened my eyes a little bit of, wow, this is clearly someone that this guy recognizes of like, no, we need this guy.
Zach Harper, NBA writer for The Athletic, with us here on The Hoffman Show. And then there's the larger conversation, Zach, where we flip this whole thing on its head and say, why doesn't every kid do this? Do you think we ever reach a point where the draft comes under serious scrutiny? The National Women's Soccer League abolished their draft recently, so there is an American sport that now with, you know, has like big time, not NBA size, but like fairly big time coverage. They're on, you know, a lot of the networks and they're making money in the whole deal. They've done away with the draft. That also exists within a context where their sport globally is competing for talent in a very different way. We know the draft has become this event, NFL draft, same thing, but in an era where NIL is real and players have more money coming in and the contracts are significantly bigger now once they get there. Do you think we ever get to a point where we just abolish the draft and we have a different way of letting players select their first team as opposed to essentially assigning them somewhere for their first job?
I mean, Adam Silver has discussed before how interested he seems in the idea of like the European soccer or an international soccer model, right? Of like clubs, and I guess basketball too, like, or, you know, they've got basketball clubs where players sign at, you know, 13, 14 years old. You know, Luka Doncic was signed at 13 years old and put in that like system for, I think it was Real Madrid, right? Or
yeah, he was a Real Madrid kid. Yeah.
And so I think Adam Silver is intrigued by that. Also, the NBA like won't do away with conferences in the playoffs because they like the tradition. So, you know, like I don't know that's such a major shakeup. They do like the pomp and circumstance of the draft. It is, you know, a business TV show for them on some level. I don't know how much money they make off that, you know, in terms of television revenue and everything, but it is a show, right? And they do like putting on TV shows. And so I don't think ultimately they would, but I wouldn't outright just say like, no, that will never happen, because I do think there is something to the idea of homegrown talent and investing into that, because I think ultimately the NBA does like the idea of the control of how players are developed, the control of where that talent comes from, the control of maybe not letting, you know, the idea of AAU basketball infecting the development of some of these children.
Zach Harper with us from The Athletic. So back to the here and now, Zach. The New Orleans Pelicans, I feel like, escaped criticism earlier in the week on the Jordan Poole trade. We obviously talked about it here through the Wizards lens, and I was like, man, I think the Wizards did well. They, you know, did the contractual side of it, but like CJ McCollum to Jordan Poole, if Poole is not a part of your long-term future, like, and it's really about next year, then like, you can make an argument McCollum's even a better fit for what they have going on here. And also, like, on the New Orleans side, why do they want Jordan Poole? And then they back it up with drafting Jeremiah Fears, and then the move that they did not escape any amount of criticism for, which is moving up 10 spots for Derek Queen by giving up an unprotected first-round pick next year. Do I bother asking you what the New Orleans Pelicans are doing, or do you not have any idea either?
Well, I would say tanking, but they just gave up their pick, so that doesn't make any sense, right?
Right.
Like, I don't know, man. Like, I like the Fears pick. I think he's going to be really good. I don't buy the bad shooting percentage from three at Oklahoma. I think he was forced into taking a lot of bad shots. He's a good free throw shooter. That usually leads to guys figuring out how to shoot at the NBA level. So he's a great pick and roll player. I think he's going to be a really good NBA point guard. So I love that pick for them. Also, you know, DeJounte Murray is coming back from an Achilles injury, so who even knows if he's going to play much next season. So I love that pick for them. The Jordan Poole trade, man, you know, anytime you can add an extra year of money for a worse player, you got to do it at the same position. I think that's Troy Weaver coming from there and being like, hey, I like Jordan. Let's add him to the mix. CJ's expiring anyway. I don't know. Like, that move was weird, and I didn't really understand that. I thought it was a great move by the Wizards to clear even more money in the process and bring in another great veteran. They've got so many good veterans in that locker room now to be around those young guys and all that flexibility moving forward to acquire bad contracts and more draft assets with it. The man, that trade, I think Derek Queen's going to be a nice, solid pro. Maybe even makes a couple All-Star games. But you're going to give up a pick that could be the number one pick. Like, it doesn't take a whole lot of mental gymnastics to think that that's the number one pick next year, which ends up being A.J. DeBanza, who's, like, a guy teams will absolutely tank for. Like, as tantalizing as, like, a Cooper Flagg. Like, this kid's going to be amazing. And so, you're giving up that possibility for a guy who also plays the same position as your alleged franchise player. I mean, as soon as that trade went through, all these people that I know, like, we all start talking. We're like, do they have a Zion deal on deck? Like, this doesn't make any sense. And if that ends up being the Milwaukee pick, that's better. You know, that Milwaukee pick, that they're a Giannis either trade demand or, you know, hamstring pull away from that being a great pick
right
next year. So, because it's the more favorable of the two. Like, I don't know, you know, all the you know, whispers from behind were like, oh, Troy Weaver, you know, Joe Dumars had Troy Weaver, like, run that whole thing this week. I'm like, that seems either like he's foisting all that stuff onto Troy Weaver, or like they just don't know what they're doing right now. But that is, I mean, I've never had less confidence in a franchise.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Because even like, hey, we think we're going to be good. It's like, okay, well then take the Milwaukee pick. Like that's helpful. And it's, I like the Fears pick too. I like Fears a lot. I was like, this kid's awesome. He's explosive. He's bouncy. He's plays so freaking fast, which I thought put him on the board potentially here. Obviously they go Johnson, thrilled with that pick, but it's him and Poole, and knowing Murray's in the hopper eventually, and you just traded for him a year ago. I like Queen. I can see where Derek Queen is like an Al Jefferson type that makes a couple of All-Star teams and is a really useful player. But he plays the same position as Zion. And it's just, here would be my question, Zach. If we're going to stop being cynical media members for a second, is there a chance that this goes well for New Orleans? Like, is there a chance we look back and go, you want to know what? Like, obviously take the Milwaukee part out of it, or even don't say Giannis is healthy the whole year. And is there a way that in this Western Conference, as loaded as it is, they finally get a healthy Zion year, some other things go right, and this pick is in the 20s, or do you just not see a path for that to be the case?
Yeah, like, if Zion's healthy, I believe they'll be in the playoffs. Like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8? That's not a top 4 or 5 team in the West, right? So, like, maybe that's somewhere in, like, the 18 to 21 range, I think. Like, best-case scenario, which, okay, like, fine, but what did... I still don't understand. It's not about, like, all right, what's the best case scenario for that to end up being? It's the process. You gave that up unprotected. That's the issue. It's not like that should at least be top 10 protected. It should really be lottery protected, but it's unprotected. It's the process of it all. Like, you didn't think about that in the slightest.
Right. Atlanta was like, how about a pick? And they're like, how about next year?
Yeah.
That's it?
Like okay, Atlanta went to them and said, okay, we want next year's pick. And they said, okay.
Right.
Deal.
Right. It's not great down there in New Orleans. And that, of course, is if Zion's healthy, a thing that has never happened. It is worth pointing out, Zion, when healthy, has been not only a really good player, but a good player that has driven a lot of winning. Like, his winning percentage is actually pretty good. It's just the GP column. Games played, not enough. And thus, New Orleans hasn't done a lot of winning since they drafted Williamson, was that 2019. Zach Harper writing about all of it at The Athletic, including the newsletter, The Bounce. Get it sent to your inbox each and every day with the latest going on in the NBA. A must-read really year-round for NBA fans, but especially this time of year, you want to keep up with all the free agency news. When that opens in a couple days, you definitely want to make sure you subscribe to The Bounce. Zach, always great to chat, my friend. I'm sure we will again soon. Thanks for some time on a Friday, and have a great weekend.
Yes, sir. Anytime.
Zach Harper with us here on the Hoffman Show. Okay. When we get back, talk about frustrating things in the basketball world. WNBA officiating stinks. It has for a long time, but it is finally getting a lot more attention, including a well-reported piece in the Washington Post that included talking to players, coaches, league executives, including the commissioner, Kathy Engelbert, and even some officials anonymously. That reporting was done by Kareem Copeland, my pal. Kareem joins us next here on the Team 980. Last night in the W, a big win for the Mystics. They beat the Las Vegas Aces. And how about this? Jade Melvin got elbowed in the face accidentally by Asia Wilson early on in that game, lost a tooth. She's out for the game. Lucy Olson, who has barely played and has not been the best for the Mystics because it's hard to play as a rookie in the WNBA, she comes in last night, plays 38 minutes, scores 14, best night of her career so far. See if that launches her into a little bit more playing time and consistency moving forward. But big win for the Mystics last night. Tonight in the W, the Dallas Wings hosting the Indiana Fever. That was supposed to be a matchup between Paige Beckers and Caitlin Clark, but Clark is going to miss her second straight game with a groin injury. That is what's trending. I'm Craig Hoffman on the Team 980.